Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're still talking about how the Supreme Lord's, Bhagawan's body is made of pure goodness. And that will lead to certain conclusions, that it's eternal, that it's full of bliss and full of awareness, consciousness. Why don't you find something to put the computer on rather than leave it on the floor? Yad ev ai kadashe yat kaya esha bhuvana traya sannivesha iti adau gyanam swatap ityatra tika krinmatam. Oh, didn't we read this? We did. We finished 10:14. Okay, so we go to 15. We go to the next file. And what do we have here? Ata eva prakrita sadvada yo guna jivasya eva natu ishasyeti shriyate. Thus we hear from scripture that the material modes of goodness and so on pertain to the jivas and not to the Supreme Lord. Often when you have the verb shruyate or shrutam, it means that this is heard from shruti. And then it would say smritam. The verb would be smaryate or smritam if we're getting some knowledge from smriti. But here that's not the case, because we're actually citing from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, which are technically smriti. So the word shriyate is not being used in that technical sense here. Anyway, we hear that material modes of goodness and the other material modes don't belong to the Supreme Lord, they belong to the jivas. Yutai kadashe, aikadashe, sattvam rajastama iti, guna jivasya naiva me iti. Sri Bhagavad Upanishatsu cha, ye chaiva sattvika bhava, rajasastamasascha ye, mata eve titan vidhi, natvaham te shute mayi, Tribir gunamayayar bhavayar ebik sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabi janati bam ebyak paramavyayam daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mame vapriye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. These are familiar verses. Should be familiar. The 11th canto, for example, states, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, influence the living entity, but not me. And in Sri Bhagavad Upanishad, the Bhagavad Gita, rather, we hear, know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am, in one sense, everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. Vishnu Kantapu, could you see me for a minute after the class? Yeah. But they, on the contrary, are within me. Deluded by the three modes, The whole world does not know me, who am about, oh boy, above the modes and inexhaustible. Okay, let's fix that. It's a mistake. Who am above the modes and inexhaustible? This divine energy of me, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Okay. We're trying to understand what is Bhagawan. The Bhagavad Purana is about Bhagawan and other things connected with Bhagawan. It's difficult to understand Bhagawan because his nature is transcendental. He's a thing. He has substance. Like, we're things, but we're living things. He's also a living thing. What is it? Nityo Nityanam, eternal thing. Chaitananam, and he's a living thing, just like we are living things. But the substance of which that thing, he, is made is purely spiritual. We don't, it's very difficult for us as finite living beings living in a material world to understand spiritual substance and spiritual nature. Therefore, Jiva Goswami, therefore the Bhagavatam, has so much to say about this, to teach us. It has to be beaten into us. We have to hear it over and over again about this spiritual nature. We have to understand it from all viewpoints because it's a foreign concept for us. It's something we know nothing about. Just like if you were being trained to become a spy by the CIA, and you were going to be sent to Iraq to be an undercover agent, you had a lot to learn. It's a foreign country. You have to learn a lot of things about it so you can get away with being a spy. Like that, we have to learn about this foreign realm of transcendence. There's a lot of things we have to learn to actually, but we have to become fit spiritually, but we also have things to learn about the spiritual world before we can enter it and understand where we are. Actually, no. You don't have to learn anything theoretically. If you just become totally surrendered to Krishna, you'll be sent directly to the spiritual world. And whatever you don't know, you'll find out when you get there. But for those who won't just surrender, there's the path of knowledge. Some people say that the Sandarbhas are written for devotees who don't have firm nishtha. Those who have firm nishtha don't need this. All this philosophical, brain-splitting discussion. If you just trust Krishna and worship him, you'll be sent to the spiritual world, and you'll find out about all this when you get there. But we have to learn it the hard way. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway, here's a commentary on this passage. Finite living entities are always faced with the choice of being controlled by either transcendental sattva or the material modes. Their decision, the finite living entity's decision, is motivated by whether or not they want to admit their subservience to the Supreme Lord. Excuse me for saying the obvious. This is what makes living entities different from dead matter. Dead matter doesn't have a choice to be what it is and do what it does. Living entities are given a choice. Consciousness is not just there just for decoration, like, icing on a cake just to look pretty. Consciousness is there because it provides choice. And a conscious being can voluntarily love. A dead rock cannot, or a robot cannot. Therefore, Krishna enjoys more from the living entities than from the dead rocks. The living entity's decision is motivated by whether or not they want to admit their subservience to the Supreme Lord. By exchanging loving service the Lord, to the Lord. I'm sorry. I'm sure the editors will catch this, but just in case, let me mark that the word to is missing. By exchanging loving service to the Lord for the pretense of enjoying and dominating. That means you give up your opportunity to love Krishna and you take instead the pretense of enjoying and dominating. They doom themselves to the control of the material modes until they rectify their choice. Mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhutak sanatanaha manakshashtan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. It's another statement from the Bhagavad Gita. What chapter were these other ones from? Seven. Okay, now we're in 15. This is said about the jivas. Only the jivas, however, can make this mistake because they are the marginal energy of the Lord. God himself never consorts with his inferior energies. He only glances once at Prakriti at the beginning of the creation and enters once the elements of nature to help them combine. After that, he deputizes Brahma and others to continue the creation and occasionally appears in the transcendental forms of his avatars. Okay. So, the Supreme Lord, who has the name Hari, is in a special position. What he's made of is purely spiritual. Continuing, Yata Shri Dashame Harir Hi Nirgunak Sakshat Prakrite Prakrite Para Purushak Prakrite Paraha Sasarvadrig Upadrashta Tambajan Nirguno Bhavet Iti Shri Vishnu Purane Cha Satvadayo Nasanti She Yatra Cha Prakrita Gunaha Sashudat Sarva Shudhe Bhyak Pumad Adyat Prasidatu Iti. We also find in the 10th canto. Dashami? Yeah. Lord Hari has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing, eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. That is what chapter? 76. 88. That would be spoken by Shukadev Goswami. This was the chapter, I think, about Bhrigu Muni testing the three chief gods to see who's supreme. It must be spoken by Shukadev. And in Sri Vishnu Purana, in the original supreme person, the material modes of goodness and so on are absent. May he, the purest of the pure, be satisfied with us. That's a negative statement. It doesn't say that there is any substance that might be taken impersonally out of context. But the Vishnu Purana has much to say about the qualities and the substance of the personality of Godhead. Vishnu Purana is not presenting Mayavad, although Mayavadis might pick on this one statement as negative. There's no material mode of goodness. He's the purest of the pure. Since these modes are here specified as material, are they? Yeah, prakrita is the word in the Sanskrit. I read the Vishnu Purana. Atra prakrita iti visheshya prakritas, tvanye gunas tasmin santye veti vyanjitam tatraiva ladani sandani samvit twayeka sarva samshraye lada tapakari mishra twayi no guna vargite iti. Since these modes are here specified as material, prakriti, there must be also present with him other non-material modes. Such is indicated more explicitly in the same Purana, even if you think there's no modes in the Supreme. The Vishnu Purana doesn't agree with you. Later on, the same Purana, it says, in you, the ultimate shelter of everything, there is a single spiritual energy. Eka, the word one, is given. Manifest as the potencies of pleasure, existence, and knowledge. Because you are free from the material modes, the mixed energy, which produces pleasure together with distress, is never found in you. So this mode of Vishuddhisattva is only one, but it doesn't make it less versatile than the three modes in the material world. That one mode can create all the variety and much more than the three modes in the material world can accomplish. Commentary. If, as the Vishnu Purana proposes, God has no material qualities, then he must have either a different kind of qualities or no qualities at all. But if he had no qualities, what would he be? Not a person, or a controller, or the source of all existence, or the proper object of worship, since being each of these is a quality. And also, how can somebody who doesn't have something that has no qualities serve any of these roles? It would be hard to avoid the conclusion that he is nothing. Nothing. The Upanishads and Puranas therefore take it as axiomatic that the Supreme has some different kind of qualities, to which kind they assign the term spiritual, a prakriti. The word prakriti is not being explained, and the opposite term aprakriti are not being explained. They're just assumed. These are basic concepts that are assumed by the Puranas, that there's a distinction between spiritual existence and material existence. That's not argued. It's assumed. The term spiritual, aprakriti, a word that in the speech of ordinary people tends to be used vaguely. The term spiritual, or aprakriti in Sanskrit. On the basis of this conclusion, throughout this Bhagavat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami is demonstrating from Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures the significance and ramifications of God's qualities being spiritual. That is the basic substance of this second Sandarbha. For more information about the personality of God, then you go to the other Sandarbhas. And for information on how to reestablish your own relationship with that Lord, you go beyond the fourth to the fifth and sixth, which present the Abhideya and Prayojana, the Bhakti Sandarbha and the Preeti Sandarbha. We'll explain on the two different levels of Sadhana Bhakti and Raga Bhakti how to revive your relationship with God. But we're still on the level of Sambandha Jnana. And this second Sandarbha is sticking to the basic discussion of the Supreme Lord and how everything about him is perfect and spiritual. Okay, and continuing, still on the topic of Vishuddhisattva. Tathacha dasharme devendren oktam Vishuddha sattvam tava dhamma shantam tapo mayam dvasta rajastamaskam maya mayoyam guna sampravaho na vidyate te grahananubandha iti. Speaking in the 10th canto, the king of the demigods, Indra, also says, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge, and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. Ayam artaha dhamma swarupa bhuta prakasha shaktihi. Dhamma is in the first line. That word has various meanings, so which meaning is it here? We can understand this statement as follows. Dhamma, effulgence, means the Supreme Lord's internal energy of illumination. Because one of the meanings of Dhamma is effulgence, twish. So not just any effulgence, not just the glare of a light bulb, but the internal energy of illumination that belongs to the Supreme Lord. That's Dhamma. Tava Dhamma, your effulgence. Or the your power of illuminating. Illumination is not just a matter of giving physical light, but of letting other living entities know something, revealing something to other living entities. Light is the medium of revelation. But illumination here is actually referring to the actual becoming aware of something. The Supreme Lord is already aware of everything, but he gives knowledge to other living entities. That's illumination. Prakashaha. Okay, continuing. The Sanskrit. Vishuddha Sattvam, that word is the first word of this verse. This is spoken by Indra Where is this verse? Okay, so that's, Indra apologizing after the fiasco of trying to destroy Vrindavan. Vishuddha Sattvam, aha, visheshana dvayena, tvastavajas tamaskam tamomayam iti. That's in the second line. Those are two adjectives. Tvastavajas tamaskam is one, tamomayam is another. Tapotra ganam, satapo tapyata iti shute. Tapo mayam, put it together, tapo mayam, prachara gana sarupam, jadyam shen api rahitam, iti artaha, atma gana mayak shudha iti vat. The pure mode of goodness is described, that pure mode of goodness is mentioned at the very beginning of the verse, and it's described by two adjective phrases, devoid of passion and ignorance, and shining with knowledge. They're both compound words in Sanskrit, but in English you have to use phrases. You can't create compound words in English, single words. It's a collection of words, a phrase. So the two adjective phrases, devoid of passion and ignorance, and shining with knowledge. Okay, now explaining this. Tapomayam, what is it? Tapomayam and dvasta vajastamaskam. So tapomayam. Here tapas means knowledge. Because tapomayam, what is that? Burning hot? What does it mean? It means, tapas means knowledge. In accordance with the words of Shruti. So tapyata. Satapo tapyata, which is Viharadharanyaka Upanishad. Let me just change the view here so I can see all the... Nope, wrong view. Hold on a second, I'm sorry. Print layout. Yeah, Taittiriya Upanishad. Sotapo tapyata. Oh, wow. 150. Okay, that's more readable. Thus, so tapas means knowledge in this context. Thus the sense of tapo mayam is whose essential self is full with knowledge, devoid of any trace of material inferiority. Okay, tapo mayam, big definition. Whose essential self is full with knowledge. Pratyuryena is one of the meanings of the suffix mayat. Mayat is not a word, it's a suffix. It's not listed in the dictionary. It should not be listed in the dictionary as a word because it's a grammatical suffix. It's a tadita. And it can mean a few different things. Here it means prachuriam. It means being full with something. Whose essential self is full with knowledge, and that means devoid of any trace of material inferiority. Similarly to what is expressed in the words, Atma Gyanamayak Shuddha, the soul, the individual soul, is Gyanamayak and pure. So Gyanamayak means full of knowledge, but that means in his original condition, he doesn't have any ignorance. Knowledge is just any awareness. So a dog has knowledge. He has knowledge about where, you know, where food is. He's full of such knowledge. But that he's not a pure jiva, he's a conditioned jiva. But in the pure self, in the pure state, the condition, the jiva who is not conditioned has knowledge with no ignorance, pure knowledge. So the soul is full of knowledge and pure. So we can take tapo mayam similarly with the same meaning of mayam to mean full of knowledge, tapas. Now how does tapas mean knowledge? Can someone explain that? From the basic meaning of the word tap? Go ahead. Who was doing tapas there? Bhrigu. This is Shruti. This is Taittiriya Upanishad. It's not talking about Bhrigu, is it? It is, isn't it? Okay, that's interesting. Okay. And then what is that talking about? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Please record yourself.
He says, "Tapo brahmeti tapasa brahma vijñāsasva." Try to understand Brahma by tapas. And then it says that Bhrigu went and satapo tapyata. But then
Bhrigu.
Yeah, Bhrigu goes and then he does tapas. But yes. The result, the tapas, he comes back and reports different levels of. Annam brahmeti, manava. That's why it translates to be knowledge.
Okay, from that context, you can see it being used to mean knowledge?
Yeah.
How?
Because the result of that is he's coming up with knowledge.
Well, okay, but maybe you get knowledge by opening a can of knowledge and heating it up, you know, like a can of beans. Maybe it does mean heat. You're saying that the knowledge is the result. Okay, well, okay. I was just thinking of, let's look at what tap means. I mean, that's good. But let's look at what tap means literally. Burn. But it has another meaning. To concentrate intention. Rather, attention. To concentrate one's attention is also called tap. So when you do tapas, you can talk about burning, or you can talk about austerities. That's another meaning. But one other meaning, when you talk about the Supreme Lord, because it's not in this Upanishad, but in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and in the Chandogya Upanishad, it's described how the Supreme Lord did tapas. So he doesn't need to acquire knowledge. He has knowledge. But there, tapas means he sat down and concentrated his attention. He focused his attention. That's another meaning of tap. And from that meaning of intense focus, you can get the idea of knowledge. When you take your mind and intensely focus it, then you should come up with some knowledge, some useful awareness. Okay. Atta prakrita sattvam api vyavritam. Ata eva mayama yo yam sadvadi guna pravahas. Te tava na vidyate. Yato sav aganedayav anubanda iti. This is a paraphrase of the last two lines. So he's tapomaya, and tapas means knowledge. Let me read the translation first. Thus, the material mode of goodness is excluded here. And so it is said that this which Maya produces, the flowing current of goodness and the other modes, does not exist in you because it is only a product of ignorance. But we said that the Supreme Lord, or rather the power of illumination that emanates from the Supreme Lord, this Vishuddha Sattva, is tapomaya. It is full of knowledge. And saying it's full of knowledge means it doesn't have any ignorance, any rajas and tamas. If it's full, then there's no room for anything else. So Jiva Goswami draws a conclusion that what Maya produces doesn't exist in you because it is only a product of ignorance. That's what the last two lines say. Navidyate, Maya Mayo, instead of Tapomaya, Maya Maya, full of delusion, this current of the modes of nature doesn't exist in you. Agrahana Anubanda, because the manifestation of the current of Maya and its modes is a result of failing to perceive the Absolute. If one is in touch with the Absolute and is aware of it, if one is Krishna conscious, or Brahman conscious at least, then the modes can't touch him. Or he doesn't, what he perceives is not Maya, is not illusion. It's real. Okay, commentary. This verse is the beginning of the prayers the humbled King of Heaven, Indra, offered young Krishna when Indra was defeated in his attempt to have revenge against the cowherds of Raja who neglected to worship him. Let me check. Is it the very beginning of the... Let me see if it's the very beginning of his verse. It's the fourth verse of the chapter, but it is the first verse, Indra Uvacha, Vishuddha Sattvam. It's the beginning of his prayers, very beginning. Tapas is usually understood to mean penance or trouble taken for a higher purpose. The word is derived from the verb root tap, to burn, and so also has other more basic meanings. Intense heat is also called tapas. And similarly, the word can also mean intense mental concentration. It's metaphorically intense heat. It's not that you have to install a fan in your head if you think too much that you're going to burn up. It's not literal heat, but it's metaphorical heat. Intense heat is also called tapas, and similarly, the word can also mean intense mental concentration. It is with this last meaning that the passage cited here from the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.2 describes the Lord of creation. Uh-oh. I say the Lord of creation is doing the tapas. Same words. Okay. The Lord of creation performing tapas. So kabayata bahusyam brajayeti satapo tapyata satapastaptva idam sarvam asvijata yadidam kincha tat srishtva tad evanu pravishat. I have an editing problem here. There's not a clear standard about how this Upanishad is punctuated. There's some editions have more bars between shorter phrases and some leave out some of the bars. So I have to decide which way to go. But for now, I have commas here and a few periods. It would be too awkward to put a period after every two or three words. That would look funny. Anyway, there's a question of how to transliterate the Sanskrit text, how to punctuate it. translation, he desired. He desired, let me become many. Let me expand. He concentrated his thought intensely. And by that concentration, he created everything of this world, everything that exists. After creating it, he then entered it. So that's tapas. God doesn't need to perform austerity. He doesn't need to practice any sadhana. And he doesn't get overheated either. So this is the third meaning. Intense mental concentration. Sotapyata. And it goes for Brihadmuni also. Okay. Now we're up to 10:18. Let's see. There are 32. I split this up into 32 parts. It's a very long anuchet. Not the longest. There are even longer anuchets in the Sandarbha. Ata eva shri bhagavantam prati brahmadinam sayuktikam vakyam. Okay. Therefore, Brahma and the other demigods make these well-reasoned statements to the personality of Godhead. They do it in the prayers by the demigods to Krishna in the womb of Devaki, in the second chapter of the 10th canto. What do they say? They talk also about Vishuddhisattva. This is in the middle of their prayers, or near the end of it. Sattvam Vishuddham Shrayate Bhavanstitao Sharirinam Shreya Upayanam Vapuhu Veda Kriya Yoga Tapak Samadhi Bish Tavarhanam Yena Janak Samihate Sattvam Nache Dator Idam Nijam Bhaved Viganam Agyana Bidapamarjanam Guna Prakashayar Anumiyate Bhavan Prakashate yasya chayena va gunaha. The demigods pray, O Lord, during the time of maintenance, you resort to the pure mode of goodness. When you appear, it says shelter, you take shelter, literally. You resort to the pure mode of goodness. When you appear in this way, you bestow all good fortune upon the living entities. By teaching them to perform Vedic activities, such as ritualistic ceremonies, mystic yoga, austerities, penances, and ultimately samadhi, ecstatic absorption in thoughts of you, thus you are worshipped by the Vedic principles. How does the Supreme Lord do this? What is he actually doing during the time of maintenance, while the material world is manifest? How is he giving this good fortune by teaching these things? You come and teach it himself? Yes, no? Sometimes, but not much. Most of the avatars, he doesn't come as a school teacher most times. It's not a very exciting role for the Supreme Lord. You let somebody else do it. Sometimes, Kapila Dev, Krishna acted as a teacher once in a while. Yeah. And Lord Chaitanya liked to teach, but most of the avatars, they have more exciting things to do than teach. So it's usually deputized. It's usually representative being sent. Acharyas being sent to do the teaching. Rishis above the, you know, on the heavenly planets, the rishis are there teaching. And on the earth, various acharyas appear to teach as representatives of the Supreme Lord. But they are representing, they're manifesting his pure mode of goodness, these personalities, these representatives. Okay, so he does it through the mode of goodness, through his representatives mostly. Teaches. He bestows all good fortune upon the living entities by teaching them to perform Vedic activities, such as ritualistic ceremonies, mystic yoga, austerities, penances, and ultimately samadhi, which is ecstatic absorption in thoughts of you. Okay, then the second verse. O Lord, cause of all causes, if this pure mode of pure goodness were not your own consciousness, then the process of removing ignorance would only be another material realization. Jnanabhidhapimarjanam. Prabhupada actually quotes these words in the Krishna book. Jnanabhidhapimarjanam. The process of removing ignorance would only be another material realization. What you are can be inferred from seeing the phenomena of the material modes, which are derived from you and are made visible by you. I actually have changed some of the translations of both of these verses to make it fit the explanation of Jiva Goswami. I'm telling you, but I'm not going to make a note of it in the book. But I am taking the liberty of changing some of the translations to fit. There's a short commentary. These verses are part of the prayers the assembled demigods offered to Krishna in his mother's womb. The demigods submitted to Krishna that he needed to show himself in this world. They're asking him to appear, to come out of the womb. He needed to show himself in this world because otherwise there could only be uninformed speculation about him. By his appearing as his avatar, the Supreme Lord transforms theology from uncertain philosophy to an empiric science, the authorities of which Vyasadeva and other sages have seen him with their own eyes and can provide their students with sound experimental procedures for reproducing for themselves what the sages have experienced. Now, let's look at this verse. What Prabhupada's translation, or basically Prabhupada's translation, if this mode of pure goodness were not your own consciousness, then the process of removing ignorance would only be another material realization. Okay, remove ignorance. The removal of ignorance would not be... Well, why does it say that? What does that mean? Why would the process of removing ignorance be only another material realization if the pure goodness was not the consciousness of the Supreme Lord himself? Can you explain that? Yeah.
Because by removing ignorance, that's where you end up in pure goodness. By removing ignorance, yes, then you arrive at pure goodness.
But if there is pure goodness.
Yeah, but that's where you arrive at. And if that pure goodness was not your quality, then it would be another material realization.
Well, okay. Okay. But the Mayavadis may say that you remove ignorance and you're left with realization of the Absolute with no qualities. No Vishuddhisattva, but also nothing material. But I guess that's discounted because it's a bogus theory anyway. It's not even taken as a possibility here. Yes, Prabhu? Tamadar Gopal?
Because if the only thing is there is material goodness,
yes,
then if you remove ignorance, then you're left with material goodness. But they say...
Okay, we're talking about sattva. Mayavadis don't accept spiritual sattva, but there is sattva here. So, then we'd remove the covering of ignorance on the sattva, and we'd be left with material sattva. It would still be materialization. It would be nothing spiritual. Okay. Demigods are talking about sattva being real. Okay. Let's try move on a little bit here. Ayam artaha. Sattvam yena prakashamana tvat tad abhinataya rupitam vapur bhavan shrayate prakatayati. Okay, we're paraphrasing the statements now. The word sattvam is there, vapur, bhavan, shrayate. These words are there in the first verse of the two. No, the second verse. Sattvam, Nachedatari nam nijambhavet viganam aganamidapamorjanam. And Shrayate is in the previous verse, actually. Sadvam vishunam Shrayate bhavanstitau. So, your good self, here is the meaning. Your good self accepts, rather manifests, the mode of goodness, which represents your body, because your body is manifested by that goodness, and thus is not different from it. Why does accept have to be glossed as manifest? What's wrong with just the idea of accepts? Something difficult about saying that the Lord accepts the pure mode of goodness? It's eternal. So you don't have to accept something that you always have. He always has that mode. So where's the question of taking it? You take something you don't have. So it's not literally takes, but shows. He has it all the time, but he doesn't always show it to everybody. Yes. Yes.
In your translation, you chose to translate Satvam Vishuddham Shrayate as resorts to.
Yes. I didn't want to say that he takes a subordinate role. What's your comment about it?
Because as far as I remember, resort is a literal meaning of resort means to recourse to something, take a recourse in something as a last measure, last step. Or frequently go to some place. So
yeah,
I just wonder if it conveys the idea here.
A resort where you go for vacation, but that's different. Can I check the dictionary right now? I'm looking up resort. It still has, the word is shrayate, which normally means to take shelter. But I thought to make it literally take shelter, that would be too literal. Doesn't sound right for the Supreme Lord. Resort is a verb. Of course, you have re-sort to sort something again, but that's a different word. Okay. To issue, the first meaning of resort is obsolete, rare meaning, to issue, to come out again. To return to oneself, no, this is not. To return, it does have the meaning of return, to retire or retreat. Or it just means to turn, direct one's attention to a subject. It has that neutral meaning. And then after that, number four, of course, this was back in the 15th and 16th centuries it meant that. That's old-fashioned, very old-fashioned. But the fourth meaning, to betake one's self to repair or go to a person for aid. Okay? To have recourse or to something for assistance or furtherance of an object. So it doesn't say here that last resort, but to go to something or somebody for help, to help you accomplish something, that's a resort. Well, I think that's okay. That meaning fits. The Supreme Lord takes help of his mode of goodness in order to manifest himself. I don't want to say literally take shelter of. That sounds awkward. Do you have another suggestion? Another word? It's okay? Yeah, so it doesn't only mean last resort. Yeah. That's a last resort, but you can have a first resort or a middle resort. Okay. Well, okay, your good self accepts, manifests the mode of goodness, which represents your body, because your body is manifested by that goodness, and thus is not different from it. Well, how about prakashamanatvat? Let's not say manifested, let's say revealed. Because manifest may sound like it means created. The body's not created. Manifesting can mean created. So let's say revealed rather than. Okay, I made a note. Your body is revealed by that goodness, and thus is not different from it. What kind of goodness? Oh, okay, more Sanskrit. Katam bhutam sattvam vishuddham anyasya rajastamo bhyam amishrasyapi prakritatvena jajyamsha samvalitatvan navisheshena shuddhatvam. What kind of goodness? It just says goodness. The verse only says sattvam, but we have to understand it as implying a certain kind of sattvam. What kind of goodness? Pure goodness. No, I'm sorry, one of the verses says sattvam vishuddham. The word vishuddham is there in the first verse. The second verse, it's reduced to just sattvam. But in the first verse, they did use the word vishuddham. So what kind of goodness? Pure goodness. Even when it is unmixed with, a word with is missing. Let me add the word. Let me see. With, okay. Even when it is unmixed with any other passion or ignorance, any other mode, the ordinary mode of goodness is still a manifestation of the inferior nature. Even if it's unmixed, it's still material, it's still inferior. Because it is tainted by aspects of materiality. Therefore, it is not Vishuddha. It's not especially Visheshena pure. Vishuddha. Especially pure. Not just relatively pure, but completely pure. Well, okay, what aspects of materiality taint the material mode of goodness? Maybe one. Temporary. It's temporary and its effects are temporary. Mode of goodness is supposed to be distinguished from passion. Things produced in the mode of passion cannot last. Things in the mode of goodness can last for a long time, but they don't last forever. Whereas things manifested by Vishuddha Sattva last forever. So that's one taint of materiality, that even though what it produces lasts very long, it doesn't last forever. And there are other taints also. It produces happiness, but not absolute happiness. And knowledge, but not absolute knowledge. Yes. The Bhartram Prabhu.
Just because it's regarding the same thing, once Madan Mohan Prabhu explained nicely how this sattva guna, it's meant to create a sense of permanentness even amidst all the continuous transformations.
That's material goodness? Or?
Yeah, material goodness is, because there is continuous transformation in the material world because of passion and ignorance. Yes. But then if a person has to live peacefully, then he has to be oblivious to these continuous transformations. If a person is continuously aware that I'm going to die, then he can't live normally. So Vishnu gives sattva, which gives an illusion that although there is so much transformation, it gives an illusion of permanence so that a person can live peacefully.
So that's how material goodness is illusory. It's creating an illusion of permanence where there isn't any. Yes. Okay. Let's see. Where am I on the Sanskrit? Okay. Therefore, it is not Vishuddha, especially Visheshena, pure. This goodness, however, this Vishuddha Sattva, is altogether pure because, belonging to his internal energy, it is untouched by any trace of material existence. Etattu Swarupa Shakti Atma Tvena Tadam Shasyapi Asparshad Ativa Shuddham Ityarta, extremely, absolutely pure, Vishuddha Sattva. Continuing, Kimartam Shreye. So what person is Shreye? What form is that? Uttama Purusha. Of what? Shri? How would you translate it? I accept, okay. So who's talking? In the first person. Krishna is asking the question of the demigods. Kim Artam, because he's in the womb. This is a rhetorical question. Kim Artam Shreye? sharirinam stitau nijacharanada vinde manat stayaya sarvatra bhakti sukha dana siyaiva tvadiya mukhya prayojanatvad iti bhavaha. For what purpose do I accept it? Krishna's question. For what purpose do I accept this goodness? Vishuddhasattva. Why bother? Why should God bother to accept some material, some mode, even if it's spiritual? What does he need a mode for? What does he need substance for? Answer, why does he accept it? For the, quote, establishment, stitao, of the embodied souls. What does the establishment of the body, embodied souls mean? That's glossed by Jiva Goswami. For the sake of their fixing their minds on your lotus feet. That's the establishment, the real establishment of the jivas. Arranging that they'll fix their minds on your lotus feet. Or, as we can understand implicitly, because it is your prime purpose, for bestowing the joy of devotional service. That's the sharirinam stiti, fixing up the living and the condition, the embodied souls properly. This is corroborated. Okay. Bhakti yoga vidan artam iti Shri Kunti vakyat. This is corroborated by the words of Shri Kunti, who appears, she says, who appears for the sake of giving devotional service in her prayers. Commentary. In their prayer, the demigods equated the spiritual substance Vishuddhasattva with the Supreme Lord's personal body. They say, if this body of yours was not Vishuddhasattva. So they're equating the two. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that this is appropriate, since in the transcendental realm there is practical non-difference between the form and the medium in which it manifests. When you're dealing with spiritual forms, there is no difference between the substance and the personality that is embodied in the substance. Material persons are different from their bodies, and the material and the matter that those bodies are composed of. But the Lord and the devotees residing in his kingdom have bodies made of Vishuddhasattva. There is some difference between the personality of Godhead and his spiritual energies, but not the absolute degree of difference that exists between the finite living entities in material existence and the ingredients of their bodies. Okay, there is difference. The Lord is not just his energies. There's a transcendental difference between the Lord and his energies, but it's not complete difference. It's difference at the same time, sameness. In the material world, we are completely different from our bodies and all our qualities, all our material qualities. Continuing the commentary, in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 10, Suta Goswami lists stiti. The word stitao was mentioned here. Jiva Goswami lists stiti as one of the 10 principal topics of the Bhagavatam. In that context, the word is understood as meaning maintenance, or more specifically, general maintenance of the population of the material world. In contrast to the other Bhagavatam topic of poshanam, special sustenance by the Supreme Lord of his devotees. Among the non-technical meanings of stiti are the acts of standing and remaining, and also situation, and constancy. This last meaning is the one used in this prayer. Not stiti as one of the topics of the Bhagavatam, because that is stiti for everybody. But Jiva Goswami is explaining the verse, the prayer of the demigods to Krishna in the womb, as referring to the arrangement for the living entities to attain pure devotional service. So we can take the meaning constancy, their permanent condition, which is the only permanent condition for a living entity, is a situation in devotional service to the Lord. Okay, we're over time, so I'll have to stop. Let's continue tomorrow. I do. I think I have two questions pending from last week from Madan Mohan Prabhu. I'm sorry. I'll deal with them this afternoon and reply to them tomorrow morning. Any other questions, just send them or give them to me. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai.